Mini episode 763 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 763. It's your favorite FDH Lounge football talkers in all the land, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, coming your way. It has been a difficult start to the season, particularly for me. We're talking NFL week four today, of course, as we do every week with the NFL. Last week, I was at least 8-7-1 on my plays overall. Only 21-26-1 for the year. It gets worse when you start looking at the other numbers. 0-3 on my big three, 2-7 for the year, 0-1 on my lock, 0-3 for the year. Kyle last week at 3-4, 9-9 for the year. So, again, I've said this in the past, whenever any of us gets off the starts like this, and usually it's just me, but I always say, double down, you want to hit it harder, and I, for one, am going to consider these wins the rest of the way to count even more than the ones thus far, because people should be doubling down on us now, Kyle Ross.
Is this like when your boy the Swami threw a CFL pick in to get a winning record one year on ESPN?
Kyle, I have something similar coming up in a little bit here. It's funny you should say that.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of upset that I'm only 9-9. Last week shouldn't have been a losing week because the books won. You know, it was weird. I just kind of was on the wrong ones. I've been giving out too many favorites and no more of that. It's all dogs this week, so I can tell you that.
Well, you know, it's considered bad form to root for somebody to rupture their quad, but if I was ever going to, that a-hole Justin Tucker, that guy backdoors me every year on some of my plays, man. That guy just, like, every year makes it his business to do that, and then he does his little celebratory thing there. That guy can go pound sand for all I care, Kyle Ross.
Wow, very harsh on the show here, huh? I mean,
yes,
I know the White House is. I know the White House is going blue in November, but there's no need to get this salty here in October as we turn the calendar to October. I mean, my goodness.
Well, and of course, Kyle Ross, all good Americans are feeling very blue about that at this point in time.
Allow me to take a knee and think about that one.
Yeah. Well, we go from the blues to the greens because the teams that are off this week on the bye, it's Green Bay and Philadelphia. So there's a little color theme working there, as well as, of course, the preseason favorites for the Super Bowl in the NFC, of course, both off the same week. I'm going to have ranting about the Eagles next week.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what, it's good. Maybe I can get a handle on them for, you know, with this off week, reevaluate, because, wow, it is looking like my biggest miscalculation on any team in any season that I can ever remember. They already have as many wins as I projected for them for the entire year. So I don't think they're going 0-13 the rest of the way. And I know you're going to say fluke. It hasn't been that fluky, man. They whipped a good Steelers team last week. They got the best point differential. I'm not saying that they should be the NFC favorites. I'm not saying they're going to necessarily make the playoffs. But thanks to Jim Schwartz's defense, and I'm a huge critic of Jim Schwartz as a head coach, but he's a great defensive coordinator. They're doing things, man. It's more to the defense than Carson Wentz. The Carson Wentz narrative is tired. The defense has carried that team, in my opinion.
Well, as I tweeted at you, the anti-science gaga out of the Eagles here doing what they're doing, I never thought that it could make a squealer blowout unenjoyable. But, again, it really kind of did because the Eagles, if you play that game 100 times, that doesn't happen 99 times. But whatever, you're going to hear more anti-science bitterness ranting from me as we go along here. So, as I say, Green Bay and Philly are off this week, the Thursday nighter, as per always, the show is going up right around kickoff time on Thursday, so we won't dwell too much on this. Cincinnati laying 7.5 to the Dolphins at home, up from 7 initially, 8:25 Eastern time from Paul Brown Stadium on the NFL Network, and I believe CBS, although USA Today Sports Weekly only says NFL Network.
No, I think it is only NFL Network. There's something going on. I remember they said last week there's something goofy going on.
Wow, okay. Like weirdness then. All right, so NFL Network only. And
didn't that just to throw you off and piss you off?
They did that. They did that. The NFL schedulers are the Philadelphia Eagles of my life. But as I look at this game here, one of the things that really kind of comes to mind, I always invoke this, and sometimes it actually works, when I talk about a get-well game for a team, and I'm looking at the rushing attack of Cincinnati, which has not been, to this point in time, all that they might have wanted. Some of that comes from getting away from it, as they have done prematurely in some of these games here. Jeremy Hill against the god-awful Miami defense here, I think, is going to get it going, and I think that's going to be the difference. I sort of blanch at laying this many points with the Bengals, but they're both 1-2, but one of these teams is not like the other. Give me the Bengals in a bounce-back spot on a short week.
Yeah, the Dolphins are not the Steelers or the Broncos, the two teams that the Bengals have just lost to. And, you know, it kind of feels like, same old Bengals, doesn't it? They're going to kind of slot into their usual spot in the AFC pecking order. But Miami's spot in the AFC pecking order is low. You and I both went against them last week. That was one of my recommendations. The Browns almost beat them outright, took that game into overtime. Miami's defense is not very good at all, and there's often injuries along the offensive line. I would never lay this many points, but I'm not going to disagree with you if you want to go with Cincinnati here.
Yeah, that's how I'm looking at it. That's the sense that I'm getting. As we go to the weekend here, we're going to be getting some absolutely great football this weekend on foreign soil, some outstanding professional football this weekend on foreign soil. I refer, of course, to my Western Bulldogs being in the AFL Grand Final October 1st on Saturday in Melbourne, going to bring home the premiership, Kyle Ross. It's been since 1954. This young, scrappy team, the first ever 7 seed to be in the Grand Final. And I know the analytics people like you are betting against us and betting on the number 1 seed, Sydney Swans. But Swans, you're going down. The Bulldogs will win and be the AFL champions. You heard it here first, Kyle Ross.
I don't give a damn about anything you just said, by the way. what I was going to say, though, I tried jumping in there, but you were on a roll. I meant to mention with that Bengals-Dolphins game, the Bengals have been on two-game losing streaks the last 3 years. Both times they've come back to cover the next game, weighing more than a touchdown at home. So a situation that's been kind of in the past.
Thank you, Mark Warren / Mark Lawrence. Appreciate the info there. So we go to
a nice
lesser.
I don't think that was deserving of a Mark Lawrence treatment. I thought that was a kind of a keen statistic. A lot better than a lot better than, you know, a bunch of kangaroos jumping around or whatever the hell you were talking about 5 minutes ago.
It's the Dogs. The Dogs are going to win the AFL championship in a much lesser game on foreign soil. Once again, the NFL sending the middle finger to the great country of England by sending them another crappy Jaguars matchup, this one being the 0-1 Jaguars, quote-unquote, hosting the 1-2 Colts, 9:30 Eastern time, Wembley Stadium in London on CBS. Greg Dumble, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call, and this is a game where the quote-unquote home field Jaguars started off as a 2.5-point favorite, has flipped to being a 2.5-point dog at this point in time. In a game where, again, macro sense, I'm not going to stick to my prediction, obviously, of the Jags being a playoff team for this year, but I don't see them at 0-4. I just really, really don't. And, Kyle, you're always saying when a line flips like that, go with the team that's now the dog. Didn't work so well in the case of those Oklahoma Sooners against Ohio State, though, so it's not impeccable. As my dad made sure to point out to me, Kyle Ross, that was a time when it
makes
didn't work.
Nauseous. I got my ass handed to me on that game.
Well,
talk about that.
I thought Oklahoma was going to cover also, but in this one, I'm going to be on the Jags. I'm going to take the same strategy. Jags will not go to 0-4. I like them here.
Were the Jags really -2.5 at one point? I'm not seeing that. That must have been a real look ahead line or something like that. I don't know. I thought the line opened.
Maybe it was the offseason.
Indy minus.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I thought the line, at least on Sunday, opened Indy -1. But regardless, money has shown up on the Colts. You know, I kind of want to be with you here on the Jags. Here's a desperate team, has not won yet. You know, they're clearly falling short of preseason expectations, as I thought they might, by the way. I was not as high on this team as some others were, including yourself. But you know what is in the back of my mind when breaking this game down? Wasn't it last year that our old friend Joe Philbin took the winless Miami Dolphins to the UK and did not return with the team? I believe he toured Big Ben after that game was over.
That's
I'm a little afraid for Gus Bradley here because he may also be touring the Royal Palace and hanging out with what's-her-face, Prince Harry and all those folks after this game's over. I don't know, man. The Jags, yeesh, they're not looking very good at all. The offense has regressed, which I thought it might. And, you know, just a real heartbreaker last week, against the Ravens as they lose by two. So I'm off this game. I hate playing these London games. I will say that the NFL in London is working, despite what you and your people think. And the Jaguars, their ownership has sort of hoarded themselves out to this experiment, which doesn't do wonders when you lose a home game every year. So,
when you're referring to somebody potentially becoming a tragic figure in London, are you speculating that we should be getting another Elton John remix going here? Goodbye, Gus Bradley.
I don't know. That was good. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. High praise indeed. So up next, a team that, of course, nobody in the league should have praise for whatsoever. It's our hometown Cleveland Browns, 0-3 at the 1-2 Redskins. 1 o'clock Sunday from FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon, and Stacey Dales have been sentenced to watch this game. The lovely statuesque Stacey Dales will be roaming the sidelines. Oh. And this is exactly one thing that might make this game worth watching. But The Redskins are weighing 7.5 in this one, up from 6.5 originally. I looked at this last week, and again, the Browns are in a part of the schedule that, if they were an actual NFL team, would be littered with some potentially winnable games right about now. And I'm going to include Baltimore the week before because they're not nearly as good as their record. The Browns, as we all know, are not even an NFL team at this point. Last week, it was purely my contempt for the Miami Dolphins that led me to go on the Browns to cover. That's not the case this week. Washington's 1-2, but they're still in kind of a bounce back kind of a mode. They're still below where they're supposed to be. They're still digging out. Kirk Cousins right now, I think, is more legitimate than Ryan Tannehill. That's not saying much, but I think it's a get well game in a way that Tannehill couldn't quite take advantage of to that level. I like for Washington to cover this one fairly easily. The Browns have actually played over their heads in being competitive the last 2 weeks. That ends here. Regression to the mean for the Browns. I like the Redskins to cover.
This is another game I just don't like. I should point out with the line that it actually at one point got all the way up to 10, and then it has come back.
Okay.
The Sharps grabbed the Browns, similar to last week against Miami, where it's just, I think it's a matter of just taking points against a team that, you know, probably shouldn't be in that price range. And it proved profitable to take the points against the Dolphins. But, you know, are the Browns kind of going to – I don't see them winning this game. And can you see them kind of doing the same thing for a second week in a row on the road, no less, just sort of hanging around? I don't know. And they are getting a lot more support this week, I'll tell you, from the public. Over half the tickets have been written on the Browns plus the points. I'm staying away because I don't like Washington in this price range at all. I think if you're going to bet this game, under might be the way to look. Because I don't see the Browns offense being nearly as effective as it was last week.
Well, and if it's strange new respect from the public, it's a public that, once again, as you always like to point out, is a step slow on things. This is a public that probably expected Miami to beat the doors off of them last week, notwithstanding the fact that Miami's not very good. So if the public is getting behind the Browns now, OMG, maybe the Browns are better than we thought. No, that's not the case. The Browns are not better than you thought. They continue to be riddled with more and more and more injuries. So this one, yeah, I mean, this is one where if you didn't have to make a play on every game like I am here, it's a clear stay away. Next game, a real interesting line here. Maybe you can help me figure it out, but this is going to be a wild.
There's no line for this game.
There's a gleam, man.
I'm looking at the screen right now. I just want you to confess that there's no line to a game so you can't pick it.
I found one online. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Gillette Stadium,
where,
Foxborough on CBS. Ian Eagle, past lounge guest, Dan Fouts, and Evan Washburn on the call. The line
is
the Patriots weighing 3.5. The Pats are weighing 3.5, Kyle. That's what it is. I found it online.
Where is this line available at?
It's a place you directed me to, no less. I went the URL that I always use for this is where I now. Granted, there's only one line on the page. Most of the rest of the books, granted, don't have a line on this one.
Yes,
I'm saying
that
was minus 3.5.
Not the line.
Yeah.
That was the opening line before it was taken off. That's not a line.
Okay. Well,
there literally is no line
anything else. In lieu of anything else out there, I'm using the line, and I'm saying New England minus 3.5. At least it's not a why ask why then. If you're telling me that it's off at so many places, it's no longer a why ask why. But I don't understand why the line would have been that close in the first place, unless, once again, overreaction. OMG, maybe the Bills are better than we thought after what happened with Arizona. Again, the Bills are not better than you thought at this point in time. Patriots should roll in this one.
I'll tell you what, a 3.5 New England's probably not a bad play. But, you know, I don't think that's what the line's going to be at all. By the way, gave out the Bills last week. What a nice winner that was for me.
Your science is dead play of the year. Congratulations.
No, that was a show. I got another one for you this week, and I'm sure you know what's coming when you saw that line. I'm sure you know
yeah.
what I'm talking about. My anti-public play of the week. But I'm not playing this game. There's literally no line available, so I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm going off the 3.5 that I found. I'm a scavenger in that way. I can find these things. And with my equivalent of the metal detector on the beach, I was able to find a line here, the equivalent of finding those quarters in the sand. So I'm going with the Patriots minus 3.5. Up next, it's the 2-1 Seahawks at the 1-2 Jets, 1 o'clock Eastern time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey on Fox. Kevin Burkhardt, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call for this one here. Seattle is laying 2.5. They're a short road favorite here, down from 3 initially. Number of factors coming into play here, which, again, my instinct, as would be the instinct of a lot of people, would be to go on Seattle as a means of continuing to dig out from what has been an unsatisfactory start to them to the season. You start looking at a number of factors, again, one that you've beaten into my head, 1 o'clock for a West Coast team, so there's that. Russell Wilson, if he goes, is not going to be nearly 100%. My guess is the backup is probably going to be in there to a good extent, a very inexperienced fella. You would think, okay, try to pound the ball. Well, you can't really do that against the Jets front seven. So there's a lot of things here. Again, my contempt for the Jets continues to be what it is, but I just think it's inescapable here that the Jets are going to continue to be off to a better start than we might have expected to this season. I look at all the factors here, and they seem to be lining up against Seattle in a game like this. Plus, you know, when I go on my bitter science is dead rants, is there a bigger culprit in the league than the Seahawks? You look at the way they laid down for the Rams 2 weeks ago. The Seahawks over the last season or two have dogs where you never expect them. I don't mean underdog dogs. I mean playing like dogs, literally, in the insult sense. And I think this is going to be another one of them. Believe it or not, I'm going to take the Jets in this one, as stinky as I think they are.
This is another one I want no part of. The backup would be Boykin out of TCU. And in the trenches, this is not a great matchup for Seattle. You kind of alluded to it. It actually reminds me of that Rams game a little bit, where we know the weakness of Seattle is the offensive line. Well, the Jets, their one strength is the defensive line. It's tough, though, to get that stinker from Ryan Fitzpatrick last week out of my brain. 6 interceptions, Jets, 8 turnovers overall. Yikes, I don't have a very strong affinity for the Jets. Usually I love home dogs. I'm going to be on a few this week, but this is not one of them. I would not be surprised if Seattle finds a way to pull this out, and I think Russell Wilson's going to play, but I'm not playing.
Yeah, they'll probably go with him, but again, that may just continue to make it worse because word is that it's been a high ankle sprain, and those are the types that take a long time to go away. And if you try to play through them in something like the NFL, it's only going to continue to make it worse. Up next, it's the 1-2 Panthers at the 2-1 Falcons. 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Georgia Dome in Atlanta on Fox. Dick Stockton, Chris Spielman, Christina Pink are the eclectic combo that is on the call for this game. Carolina is laying 3 points down from 3.5 at the open. And, again, an interesting game here, but I keep coming back to in terms of where you expected the teams to be at this point in time, high water mark, low water mark. The Falcons not as good as their record. The Panthers certainly better than their record, even though you and I said they would not be 15-1 again. I'm sure we didn't expect them to necessarily have more losses in September than they did all of last year, but that's the way it's played out so far. This looks like a classic bounce back game for me. Give me the Panthers covering the number against the Falcons.
I would never endorse a road favorite on this program, but if you made me, it might be this one. Actually, I also see the Panthers bouncing back, and I know you love these historical trends, Ricky. The last six meetings between the Panthers and the Falcons have all gone under. Interestingly, Atlanta last year was the top under team, 14-2 in all games, but the over has gone 3-0 so far in their games. Real shootout there on Monday night against New Orleans. But this is a big step up in class for the Falcons, looking at their first three opponents. I mean, they played Tampa Bay, the Raiders, and New Orleans. Now they've got the defending NFC champions coming to town. And remember, revenge game for last year's only regular season loss as well. So the Panthers should be extra fired up for this game. But no road favorite for me.
Yeah, I know that's very rare for you to do that. Used to be completely non-existent. Now we downgrade that to rare. But, I don't blame you for not making that the spot here. The next game on the slate, the 1-2 Lions at the 0-3 Bears. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Soldier Field in Chicago on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert along with Daryl Moose Johnston and the lovely Tan Laura Oakman on the call. This is a game where the Lions are laying 3 points up from one initially. And this is one where, again, I talked about this early on in the season here. A lot of strange new respect for the Lions kind of built into the Lions the first couple of games here. The Bears have undershot where I expected them to be, and that's a big understatement. And I think they've undershot where you expected them to be as well. You didn't expect them to be this bad at this point. I know when you look at it, I mean, Detroit is still a fairly short road favorite, not as short as where they opened, obviously. But I'm still seeing, again, a little bit of a disproportionate effect here in terms of the way that they're being treated by the odds makers versus the Bears. This is a game where everybody seems to be writing off the Bears, just assuming they're going to 0-4. We're due for a little bit of regression to the mean as far as the Lions have really had the Bears number the last couple of years, despite not really being that much better of a team than them over the period of time. This isn't like if Green Bay was dominating the Bears, where it would be a little bit easier to understand. It seems a little bit fluky that the Lions have done so well against the Bears. I don't really see a logical explanation for that being the case. I'm on the Bears in a bounce-back spot here. I'm stubborn on the Bears, but I don't see them going to 0-4. So my reasoning is a little similar to where I was at with Jacksonville.
Yeah, well, this is all public here on the Lions. That's why the Lions moved up to three. Over 80% of the tickets have been written on the Lions here. The public, obviously, they take a look at an 0-3 team that played a couple of primetime games the last 2 weeks and lost, has not covered yet this season. And so they obviously have no affinity for them. I'm with you. This is my first recommendation of the week. I'm on the Bears. They've got to win a home game, for crying out loud. You talked about their struggles in the past against the Lions. I believe they've lost to them and failed to cover six straight times. Let me double check that. I thought I had it written down and I can't find the paper, but I can put this up very quickly.
They have.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's six straight losses and six straight non-covers too, but they haven't covered against their division foe in the last 3 years. And I agree. That seems fluky. I don't view the Lions as any kind of superior franchise to the Bears, really, over that time. I guess they did make the playoffs 1 year. I lied, by the way. The Bears actually have covered twice. They're 2-4 against the spread, but 0-6 straight up. But so this is the Bears' time to break that streak and get a win on the board here. The Lions, that was kind of a misleading final last week. They were down big to Green Bay.
Yeah, they were. They really, really were. And then, again, I'm thinking regression to the mean with the Bears. And, again, you brought up a point I didn't even think about, how bad the Bears have been at Soldier Field going back to last year. I think I had referred jokingly to them having the road field advantage last week at Dallas. That should not be the case for an NFL team. That doesn't sustain itself over the long term. We're due for the pendulum to swing the other way on this one here. Up next, it's the one.
I would love to see Detroit's record as a road favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be many times they've been a road favorite. Ever.
No, not in the recent history anyways. The 1-2 Titans at the 2-1 Texans, 1 o'clock Eastern time, NRG Stadium in Houston on CBS. Tom McCarthy, Adam Archuleta on the call for CBS. This stadium is, of course, the site of Super Bowl 51, which means this is the one and only time the Titans will be visiting Houston all year long. This is a game where Houston is laying, I'll have to work that into the teams that they play as they go along here, at least the lesser lights. Houston's laying 4.5 in this one. It's been pretty solid throughout. We're not going to see J.J. Watt.
obviously, because of word coming out that the back has been re-injured. I said going into last week against New England, I hammered it pretty hard. I called it my teenage rebellion pick. You can't make me believe that Houston is this good in terms of the respect they were getting from the odds makers and everyone out there. The line this week shows that that has been kind of equalized. This is about what you would expect them to be laying to a Tennessee team that is slowly improving, I would say, by the size of cockroach steps, but still not very good. In a line that is more sane than you have been seeing with the Titans thus far this season, I think this will be a bounce-back game. 3 extra days from playing on Thursday night. Give me Houston covering the 4.5.
I'm on the other side here with a recommendation. I'm taking the Titans plus the points. Yeah. This is another division rivalry that's been very lopsided one way. Going back to 2011, Houston has covered all but one game. They've only lost two straight up. They've swept the last 2 years, both straight up and against the spread. But I just think the Titans are a little bit better this year. I really do. And I think the loss of J.J. Watt really hurts Houston. And that offense for the Texans stinks.
Yeah.
Football Outsiders has them last in DVOA on that side of the ball.
It's been up and down. They've had their moments, but almost none of those moments were against New England, I'll tell you that. So, yeah, they've
– No, that was a disgraceful performance. It was just such a conservative game plan. I mean, to get worked like that by a third-string QB, was really, really pretty embarrassing. I mean, because Brissett did not do much. I mean, if you go back and look at his numbers, I mean, it was just all, Houston just basically folding like a cheap tent.
As I've been saying since the 2012 season opener, Frank Solich greater than Bill O'Brien. I think we saw it again in that game. So up next, it's the 2-1 Raiders. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Not quite as bad as getting done by the Ohio Bobcats in your own house, but still not very good. Bill O'Brien in big spots. You go back to the wild card game last year. Ugh, he's going to start getting a reputation for that. Mark my words. The 2-1 Raiders at the 3-0 Ravens in a rematch of the 2002 AFC Championship game. The Raiders, of course, will be out for revenge. That's the game where Tony Siragusa cheated and took out the shoulder of Rich Gannon by falling on him there with his 400 pounds. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Steve Verwine, Chris Fisher on the call for CBS. And this is a game where Baltimore is laying 3.5. It's been a fairly steady number going throughout. This was one of the tougher games of the week for me. And by the way, when I get to my big three, I'm going to talk about my revised methodology for this week here. But I'm going back and forth on this. And what I'm ending up on, where the roulette ball is ending in terms of my reasoning, is the Oakland defense, which looked better last week against Tennessee, but again, better against Tennessee. Until I can believe in this defense a little bit more, I don't see them doing very well in a spot like this where Joe Flacco has a greater selection of weapons down the field than he's been used to having pretty much at almost any point in his career. So it's hard for me to see the Ravens at 4-0, but that's where the roulette ball landed for me. I'll take the Ravens covering the 3.5.
Yeah, the Raiders are that rare underdog getting a lot of support. We talked about this a little bit with the Browns earlier in the program. The Raiders getting 69% of all tickets written on them so far for this. That's pretty irregular, quite frankly. The Ravens have always kind of been a good home team. Yeah, I'm kind of with you in that it's weird to see the Ravens be 4-0, but this is the fourth time in a row they've been favored. So, I mean, all they're doing is winning games they're favored. This is Oakland's third trip east in 4 weeks. I assume they stayed after winning at Tennessee last week. I'm not playing this game, but, yeah, I think the Ravens might be, especially at 3.5. I would hate to lay 3.5 and get caught by the hook. But, I see the Ravens winning. Whoever wins this game, I'll tell you what, is definitely above where I had them at this point of the season. So the math, though,
yeah,
friendly to the Ravens. The Ravens, we kind of expected a bounce back from them. They lost a lot of close games last year. It was well documented. And they're winning them this year. So they look like one of the classic bounce back teams from year to year.
They do. And, again, another 1 o'clock game for the Raiders where, as you pointed out, there can be issues over a period of time. A 4-0-5 game for a team that is traveling from a good chunk of the West. It's the 3-0 Broncos at the 1-2 Bucks, 4:05 Eastern Time, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa on CBS. Spiro Dedis and Solomon Wilcots on the call here. Denver is laying 3 points to Tampa Bay, down from 4 initially.
a number of games where I really, really went back and forth on them this week. Again, you should be proud of me. The temptation for me would be to go on Denver and to be able to kind of sustain what they've been doing thus far. On paper, they should never lose to a team like Tampa. But I look at this. For the number of points that Tampa's been giving up, they've been a little bit unlucky in the sense of, particularly against the run, they've been pretty good. So they've given up more points than some of the yardage totals would lead you to believe. Not necessarily through the air, but certainly on the ground. The Broncos are dependent on the ground game right now to help Trevor Siemian keep looking like a competent NFL quarterback. So he's going to be forced to do more than he's had to do, I think, this week, which is strange when you look at some of the defenses he's played against, Carolina included. But he's going to have to do more, and I'm not sure that he's ready for it. Give me Tampa covering the 3 points at home.
Oh, I love it. This is my favorite pick you've ever made.
Okay.
I love it so much. I love it so much that you went with Tampa, Ricky. I'm so proud of you. I'm on it. It's a recommendation. Look, this is just my philosophy. We always kind of hammer home our respective philosophies, and I look at this matchup, the public perception, and the current ticket count, which is 86% to 14% in favor of the Broncos. And I think to myself, when the books set this line, they know what they're doing. They're inviting an onslaught of public money. I imagine Tampa Bay is going to be their biggest need so far of the season. I'm going with the guys behind the counter, not the ham and eggers that are running up to it. Give me the Bucs.
Okay. All right. Sound reasoning as always.
And here's another thing, too, I should point out. Here's another thing. Denver, this is the second of back-to-back road games. They did win the first leg for Tampa, second of back-to-back home games. They lost the first one. So, you know, there's another reason to me. I think the Bucs can win the game outright. Obviously, short number, you have to think they're going to win outright if you're going to do that. I would not be surprised while the public will be stunned.
You do indeed. And, again, I go back to the beginning of the year. Broncos losing to Tampa Bay, I wouldn't have necessarily blinked at that. It's not that I thought Tampa Bay was that great, but I certainly never thought Denver was on a par with what they were doing last year, which is what they've been doing thus far. So as you say sometimes, early in the season, don't completely abandon what your preseason thoughts were. And if I look at this, I wouldn't have been shocked by Tampa Bay winning this game at home against Denver before the season started. So that's kind of where I'm at as well. A rematch next of multiple NFC championship games, particularly in the 90s, but also one in the 70s and one in the 80s. It's the 2-1 Cowboys at the 1-2 49ers, 4:25 Eastern time from Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, where none of these NFC championship games were ever played, nor will they be again in the near future. This game on Fox with the A-team of Buck Aikman and Andrews on it for whatever reason. Their token time to call 49ers game this year, I guess. And this is a line where it opened as a pick. It got up as high as Dallas minus 2.5. It has settled back down to 2 points at this point. And, again, a very, very – we're getting down to some of the most difficult games of the week for me to pick. And this is just a thing here where I suspect – and I understand that some of it goes to the schedule makers and the way that it kind of lays out and what the Cowboys have had for them, but – for lack of any other philosophy here, I just don't see the Cowboys at 3-1 at this point. I think there's a little bit of a bubble there.
Wow.
It might be easier to see them at 3-1 than the 49ers at 2-2, though.
Yeah.
But the Cowboys are another team, much like Denver, that they're playing a little bit above what I might have thought. And, yeah, I picked Dallas to win the division before the year, but that was with their first-string quarterback. So are they going to win 3 out of 4 with Dak Prescott? They could. It's a bad early schedule. But much like I've been picking in some other games this week, I think the air is due to come out of the balloon a little bit. A team that I absolutely have contempt for, the 49ers, I think they can joke one out at home here and cover the 2.
I hate this game. This is my least favorite game on the whole board. No, nothing for me. I have no respect for the Niners. I think Gabbert is a horrible quarterback and is worse than Prescott. So, you know, I think the line's about accurate for this one. I see no advantages. And, you know, the loss of Dez Bryant, while it hurts my fantasy team, may not hurt the Cowboys because Prescott's been a little bit better than Romo in terms of spreading the ball around.
Right. I think that's a very good point. But, yeah, it's a game that you wouldn't want to be betting on unless you had to. We go to the Sunday Nighter, which is the last of my games before my big three. It's the 2-1 Chiefs at the 2-1 Steelers, 8:30 Eastern time, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on NBC, Michael's Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call. This is a game where Pittsburgh is laying 4.5. It opened at 4. It's been up as high as 5. But it's in that you always talk about the dead zone there between the field goal and the touchdown, and it has kind of lingered in there a little bit. A couple factors that I'm looking at here, again, an absolute humiliation that the Squealers are coming off in the Battle of Pennsylvania last week. So they're going to be coming out kind of nasty. And a stat courtesy of USA Today Sports Weekly, Alex Smith, in his 129-game career, when he's had a passer rating of at least 100, he is 26-1 in those games. So he's had disproportionate success when he has been above a passer rating of 100. I look at this game, I think to myself, is he going to be above 100? Probably not. I'll take Pittsburgh in a bounce-back spot Sunday night.
In the dead zone, I really don't like this game at all. I'd look at the total if you're interested in playing this game, and I think this game goes over, quite frankly. I just saw something that Kansas City, both of their starting cornerbacks didn't practice today. That's not good going against Pittsburgh.
Right. So, that just makes it all the more uphill for them in this spot, on the road, on national TV. Up next, my big three. Again, as I've illuminated thus far, 2-7 at this point in the season, I am changing it up. I am going with my three most picks on the board here, the three toughest games, the three where I the most, because look, the games I love aren't treating me well here. So the ones that were the most agonizing are going to be my big three. Changing it up, I've never done this before. Up
I
first,
like the strategy by you.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. It's a quite frankly, desperation.
How many times have I told you I always like your other 13 bigger, more than your big three?
Well, these are definitely other 13 picks in terms of my usual methodology. 0-3 Saints at the 1-2 Chargers, 4:25 Eastern Time, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, and past lounge guest Jennifer Hale on the call here. San Diego is laying 4 points down from 4.5 initially, and this is a game where I look at the balance that both teams are going to need in a game like this. It's a must-win game, really, for both teams. There's going to be a lot of desperation here. In a lot of ways, it might be a better game and less sloppy than some of the games involving the better teams this week. But I look at the Chargers, 81.7 yards per game given up on the ground. I wouldn't have expected a number that good throughout the course of the season here. I think it's going to disrupt the balance for the Saints on a short week. I think it's going to force Drew Brees and company to be one-dimensional. Give me San Diego here to win this game, cover at E4, and send the Saints to 0-4.
I don't know. Some other week I'll rant about the Chargers and what they've done to me here these first 3 weeks. It's just these close losses weren't supposed to happen this year, Ricky. They weren't supposed to happen.
Right. Any other thoughts?
No, not really. I know we're up against it time-wise, so yeah, I'm going to leave it to that. I'm going to root for the Chargers to win this one straight up because I need it as far as the future total, but, man, they've disappointed me in two of these three games.
Okay. All right. No problem with substitute. That works, too. It's the 2-1 Rams at the 1-2 Cardinals up next, 4:25 Eastern Time, University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on Fox. Tom Brennan and Charles Davis, Peter Schrager on the call. This is a game where Arizona is laying 7.5 points down from 8.5 initially. You and I said coming into the year we expected a little bit of regression from the Cardinals, certainly not to the point that we've seen thus far. I had them at 9-7, and as a playoff team, a wild card team, the Rams have been a little bit better than we thought, certainly, especially the last 2 weeks, not the first week, but the last 2 weeks. I look at a game here. I look at what the Rams are able to do against some teams in the trenches. And, again, I think Todd Gurley finally getting untracked last week. I look for more of that against Arizona. I think that the Rams are going to be able to play ball control at least well enough to stay in this game. Again, this is not normally a pick that would be in my big three because I hate taking the Rams here, but I will. Give me the Rams getting the 7.5.
Wow, I actually, there's one favorite on the board that I expect to do real well this week. It's actually Arizona, believe it or not. I saw a stat that Jeff Fisher, something like a third of his wins with with the Rams have been against either Tampa or Seattle, the two teams he's beaten this year. So, I don't know. It seems too easy just to back Arizona again and expect them to do what they did against Tampa Bay in week two. So I'm laying off. You know, laying more than a touchdown in a division game is typically not prudent.
Understood. We go to my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL week 4. It's the Monday Nighter.
It's the 2-1 Giants at the 3-0 Vikings, 8:30 Eastern Time, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis on ESPN. McDonough, Gruden, Salters on the call. Minnesota is laying 5, up from 3.5 initially. Well, as you would expect, with the three plays that I feel are the weakest that I'm going with, and this is the weakest of the week, I don't have much in the way of explanation. I just feel like we've seen a little bit of air drain out of the Giants' bubble, and I feel like it's the Vikings' turn. I was on them to cover last week against Carolina, so I'm not naysaying the Vikings to this point. I feel like the air is a little bit due to start coming out of their balloon. They've established themselves as one of the best teams in the league, primarily with that defense, but they're doing enough offensively. Give me the Giants in this spot to cover the 5 in the Fran Tarkenton Bowl.
That's funny. This is my 4th recommendation of the week, and I'm with you. 2 weeks ago, when we lined up on Monday Night Football, it was not good with the Bears against the Eagles. I look for different results this time. Do you know that Minnesota is now 17-3 against the number since the start of last season? That is insane. They've got to start not covering some games. My hat's off to them. They're very well coached. The defense is tremendous. I did not expect they would go into Carolina and win last week. But they're off a outright dog win. The Giants off a straight-up loss is a favorite. I just think we all meet in the middle here, and the Giants cover and possibly take the game outright.
Yep. And although we haven't used that rationale for any other games this week, this is a classic spot where you look at a game and you say it's an 8-8 week. I can more easily see both of these teams at 3-1 than I can the Vikings at 4-0 and the Giants at 2-2. It sounds like you would kind of agree a little bit when you say meet in the middle.
Yes, so, absolutely. I liked the Giants better than the Vikings coming into the year. I'll be very honest with you.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people did. Although, again, the Giants are always a team where it's hard to get a handle on them ahead of time because of that range of potential outcomes with them. So you're on the Giants, you're on Tampa, you're on Tennessee, and you're on Chicago. You and I got a line on my lock pick of the Giants. I am on San Diego, and I am on the Rams as well. There's a real fugly threesome, particularly with the first two teams. So we'll see how this plays out. Overall thoughts on the slate, Kyle?
I would say this is my least favorite of the first 4 weeks of the NFL season. There are a ton. I gave out 7 games last week, which is more than I like to. There were just a ton of games this week that I said, nope, not interested, which I guess kind of made it easy for me because, I can concentrate on a few of them. So, but we shall see.
It's a tough slate. It definitely is. I don't know if I hate it as bad as I hated the last 2 weeks, but I had 7 and 8 wins the last 2 weeks respectively, and last week 8 wins with a push. So I don't know. Sometimes I do better when I hate the slate. It's hard to kind of say why that might be, but we'll see how this plays out. We start getting into some more teams on the bye weeks next week with week 5, but week 4 should be a very, very interesting slate. And one more time, Kyle Ross, go Western Bulldogs in the AFL Grand Final here this weekend as well. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.